Detta är kassett 2, sida 1. Fortsättning med Conrad Reinell, Minneapolis, Iowa. Kassett 2, sida 1.
Meetings, you know, and exams, you know, in a sacristy, really there is.
Sacristy,
yeah. Yeah, beside the church.
Yeah.
And boy, him and I got to be the best gun buddies you ever did saw. He picked me off. He embarrassed me, you see, he did that in a way, but I called for it, I guess. But boy, he hit it. He put me to do everything, and even walked with him, you know, away from there, you know, and he always called on me.
You got the ticket, and you got flyttningsbetyget och utvandringsbetyget and the whole thing then from the pastor, and the way you went to the United States.
Yeah.
You went on Drottningholm, or?
Yeah, well, see, I went on, I don't know which one. Kungsholm, I think, was the first one.
Kungsholm.
Kungsholm, yeah.
Direct to New York.
Right, New York, from Göteborg.
Oh, and there you saw the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, boy, he did that.
How about Ellis Island at that time?
Did we you, went through there.
You went through there. Yeah. Do you remember anything specifically about it?
Oh, yeah, my mommy came in, you know. They got up and said...
What did they do to you? Did they ask you questions?
Well, the quota. You see, every country had a quota those days. I don't know if that implied anymore or not. But there were probably 25, 30 ships landing in the harbor on the night before 1st of May, see, the 1st of May, when the quota was opened up again, see, for the month of May, or probably 2-3 months, see.
So you came in May then?
Yeah, I got on the American soil, but I got a, probably 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning on May the 1st.
May 1st.
We were one of the first ships they unloaded, see, they took that, I don't know how they could tell which one it was, see, but they were from all over the world out there.
And then you went to Ellis Island?
So, yep, so they unloaded it. We were up early, so they knew it, you see. I think they got us out of bed at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, see.
Well, there it is.
And, see, to get our things together, you know, and our papers ready, you know, to get something to eat, see, before we left the ship. So I don't remember what time it was, but they picked us up off the ship in those little ferries, you know. A couple hundred on each one of them, see, and hauled us over. And we got into Ellis Island, and they were pretty slick. But it was just like coming in a prison. That's how it was.
A lot of people?
No, there was cages. Just like rooms, see, but the iron bars. And a lock on the door. And all along, when we went down, we popped 3 or 4 wide. And we were all mixed up. Now we tried to keep together, if we wanted, we was a bunch, or 7, we kept together, see, because we figured we wanted to go out the same way, you know, and, as long as we could, see. But anyway, we got split up in there, and because there was something wrong with somebody, they shoved me in one of those pens, see. There were doctors standing in a row, see. And one examined your muscles, and one examined to see you. What the sex you were, yeah. You know, and look in your eyes, look in your ears, and try your ears, and look in your head if you had any lies, and all these things, you ask a few questions to let you go. And there was a guy sitting, another bunch of guys sitting, they had big thing on, you know, he had numbers on them, see. And there was number on the railroad we were supposed to go out on, see. And some of them said the Great Northern, some said the Sioux Line, some of them said Chicago, New York, and Illinois Central, you know, New York Central, all things, see. And they put us in one of these pens, see. They had the same number and locked us up in there, see. And we went in there so awfully long. They got a bunch of ferry or whatever full, you know. And then they hauled us over to the quay to well, it was a big railroad yard, that's what it was. And they did put us on two different guys, depending on what number you had, see. Well, we got split up there, and there were just some of them, see, went down to south, see, from New York, see. They went down to Carolinas, you see, and down to southeast. Some of them, see, went to Canada. Some of them, see, well, a lot of them, they made it. They go clear to Washington, state of Washington. Well, we got, I don't know how it was now, but we all met in Chicago the next day.
All of you together?
Well, our bunch.
Oh, you seven?
Well, yeah, we got together in Chicago. the next morning, and they hauled us. I remember how it was. You know, we had a. They put us in old railroad cars. They just had one axle on each end of them. Old passenger cars. They looked like we painted yellow. Rickety things. I never thought it was 100 years old the way they looked then. See, then what they. And there was there were wooden seats in there, screwed to the floor. And we didn't, you know, that day, they hauled us out as fast as they could, see, because...
They was going to, towards Duluth
then? No, they were going towards Chicago, see.
Oh, from Chicago?
Yeah, till Chicago.
Oh, I see, they were to New York.
We were in New York and we were going to Chicago. That was the first leg.
Yes.
And I remember, anyway, we got into one of these damn cars, and somebody, I don't know when the heck they got the hold of a screwdriver, somebody had a monkey in this. But those seats, you see, was all hard ones, you know, like pews in the church, you know. And they had a, just for one person, see, they had an armrest on each side, see. And we said, we're going to sleep here, we stay in here all day and all night, we're going to get pretty tired boys, see. So we had somebody. Got a hold of this screwdriver and we unscrewed every doggone seat, see? And piled them up at the end of the car, see? At the railroad car, see? And then we lay down on the floor, see? And had a suitcase, and nobody had any trunks or anything in there. Some of them came with trunks, you know, but they were in the baggage car somewhere. And then we had a suitcase for, and we slept on the floor that night.
How about the conductor? What did he
say? Well, there probably was one that around. They never asked for a ticket. They all knew we were going. Just like a cattle train. That's what it was.
Because nobody could speak anything.
No, else. Nobody could speak any English, you know, anything, you know. Probably, you know, the Swede, you know. And they, when we got on, they, we had to go through the thing. We could buy a sack. They had a couple of oranges and a banana. And they had some bread. And I think it had some medwurst or something, you know, some dried meat, you know, corn, you know, varieties, you know, something like that. There was enough to sustain you for a day, I expect, you know, it cost a couple of dollars. But we're supposed to have $20 when we left New York.
Well, $20?
$20 we had to have, see.
And they checked that
at the time? They checked that as we got off, see, that we had the money, see. So we wouldn't get in trouble after leaving New York.
So they checked there before you left New York that you had $20?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they did.
At the railroad station?
At the railroad station. They're going by there, I guess it was Ellis Island probably they did, see. Or ask you when you had it.
So $20?
Yep, that's right.
And everybody had it?
They said they had it. They never checked you exactly, but because it was taking too damn long time, you know, to everybody get the money. Pocketbook out, they said. Well, he probably said it, signed it for it.
So you never spoke Swedish at any time at Ellis Island with you? Well, were anybody that translated?
Yeah, they could talk all kind of languages.
Oh, they could?
Yeah.
So they helped you?
Yeah, but they knew which ship they came from. You know, they could talk Italian and everything in there. See, but they didn't have any trouble. We didn't have to talk because they knew what to do with you and they put you where they wanted you to be. That was the whole thing in a nutshell. So but I remember the next morning, you had about daylight, and it was probably 5 o'clock, you know, daylight. We were going over the mountains. What's doggone? We had all the windows open. It was hot. And we had all the windows open on these cars, you know. So, what's doggone noise? And I looked out, and we got up and looked at the coming. And by God, they had two or three Indians ahead of that train, and there were two or three pushers, see. And they were really chugging. And you could hardly see the Indians up in front. And there was the worst trailer, the first trailer I got beyond that train. I could go over that Allegheny Mountains over there, by together with the 5-6 Indians.
Tough going.
Pushing and pulling you up. But that's the truth, because they were done. I have an idea. They probably hadn't been greased for 6 years. The darn car. Rough, it was just, you had better than anything.
And it was dirty too, I suppose, from the soot.
The soot coming out. We looked like we were even firing the boilers ourselves.
So you couldn't wash up then for about...
No, we didn't wash up for 2 days. Three. Well, we got to Duluth Saturday night.
You didn't stop in Chicago in the U.S.
Yeah, I skipped it, yeah. We all got together there, you know.
Yeah.
Not all of us, but most of us, and some we knew from the ships, you know. And we had to change train there, see.
Oh.
And two different fellows, because they all unloaded, see, went back to get New York. And I remember we went back, two, three of us, and I said, we're going to see Chicago, you know, and we went outside, two, three of us, you know, in Chicago. And boy, there was guarding us. We didn't know, they were civilian guys, I guess, they didn't have any uniform, you know, I don't think. And, you know, and we weren't supposed to leave, go out in the street. And boy, did they grab us and get us back in.
They did.
They were cussing us in some language, I don't know. And so I asked another guy there, you know, inside there, no, you can't do that. He said, my God, someone will nab you out there. He said, you got to stay here, be responsible for you. See, they thought that they were going to catch us, somebody, see. Being that we couldn't talk back, see, and anything like that, and knock us in the head, you know. Kidnappers, that's what it was.
They were particular.
Oh yeah, they watched us, I'll tell you all we did. Well, we quit, and from then on, I don't remember that thing. See, the first night, they took us way up through Buffalo, you know. That railroad that we were on, whatever it was, Erie or what it was, see, they went up through but we were in Canada, see, and we went to Pontiac, and we went to Detroit, because they didn't let us out, see, but we could see, and we could, but there was somebody in the bunch, I guess, you know, that probably, there was not, that been here before, or something like that, you see, that they could read, you know, Detroit, and because we read Buffalo, we could.
And you got enough to eat and drink and so on?
Well, we had this
sack,
and then, see, and then when we left that, this is Chicago, then we got a little on a more little decent train, see. Uh-huh. There were better baggage, better cars, you know, and everything. And then we get up on Saturday night, we got to Duluth, in the afternoon, and we were walking down, we didn't know what to do, we were just fooling around there, you know. And then they said, you know, down the street, close by the water, if you ever been to Duluth, you know, that's right down on the water there, see. Uh-huh. And there was a side street, went down. And they said, come in, vi talar svenska. Oh, that's a Swede down there, see. So we went down there. And, because they could see, you know, we had the two suitcases and those numbers, you know, and they didn't see that we were immigrants, you know, we couldn't talk and things. So we talked Swedish, and they were used. Merchants, you know, selling clothes, you know, because they couldn't sell us anything. But anyway, we said, we talking about something, is there any Swedish place we can sleep or something? We asked about something sweet, or anybody, we thought what was on our mind, get a job. That's exactly what was on our mind, probably. So they would help us out. He said, out there, the clock here. They said, there's a bus going out there. So we got on that bus the next morning. I remember we had $5 apiece left because we were playing little cards, a little poker, you know, a little this and that, you see, on the train, see. And that was the fifth. That was the fifth day. And we had $5 apiece, him and I. And so we had enough for lodging, but I can't, for the life of me, I forgot where in the heck we slept that night. I think we probably slept in the alley. I don't know. Because we probably wouldn't let the last dollar go. We had to eat, see. Now we were on the ground, you know, nobody look after us, see. Well, anyway, we got to the bus station. The old doggone dilapidated bus, you know, they're rattling and spitting and fuming, you know. We got on the thing, and it was a gravel road, big boulders laying in the road, you know. There's supposed to be gravel road, you know. So we got on the thing, and we got out to Cloquet. That night, and I still don't remember where we slept that night either. But anyway, Monday morning, we went down, I was going to come for a job, see? And so we, I think it was the first stop, and we went down to the paper mill. And lo and behold, there was a guy down there, a foreman, on the worst, what they call the wood room, if you've been up there, you know, where the wood comes off of the river, swampy, you know.
Yes.
Where they cut it up, you know, chip it up, and bark it, take the bark off, you know. It was a foreman in there, see. So he took a look at it, he said, you want to work, he said. You know how to work, or can you work as well? He kidded us a little bit. He's Swedish.
He's Swedish?
Yeah, he was a Swedish boss, see.
Oh.
So he said, yeah, we can work. Oh, you ready to go? He said, yep, you ready to go. He told him in Swedish, yeah. Come to work tonight, 6:30 o'clock, he said, both of you. On a night shift, see. By God, we could run in at 6 o'clock. But there was a heck of a room, see. Well, then we found he actually got in a place to stay. Yeah, that's how it was. No, we didn't see. Well, I said, I know a guy that would like food stays with him. So we get in, found that place that night, see. So we had a place when we, the next morning, you know, but after we worked the night, over the night, see. Well, this boy and I, we stayed at the same time, same yard, my buddy. Well, he got, one of us, he knew the place, but in another department, the guy we stayed with, see. And he had three children here. And he could talk Swedish. And his wife could talk Swedish too, but the man came from Sweden, and the girl was Swedish, but anyway. The other boy stayed with me, against me, for about, actually, probably a month or two, I don't know. It probably wasn't that long. And he got in the room, he was working in the finishing room, this guy we stayed with, see. And he took my buddy and put him in the finishing room. It was cleaner, you see, to load him out the finished paper, see. So he had the same, got the same money as I did, but it was cleaner, see. And he was a little older, the other boy, older than I was. Well, anyway, whatever the reason was, he took him out of there. And like I said, the wood was coming in on conveyor, see. And it was a fork in the conveyor, see. And we had to sort all the wood that come in, see. We had to judge the length, see. There was supposed to be a certain length that could get into a certain machine, see. And there's all certain machines were down in the basement. They go went down in there, made different kind of paper of it, see. And if it was any bark on it, see. But most of it was bark. It came right out of the river when it went through a big, like a big churn, see. Probably had two, three car loads and that damn big thing. So I've never seen so big electric motor in my life that pulling that thing. But they were slippery, you know. They came out of the wet, you know, the water dripping. We had a rubber
apron.
And when I stood out of that yard, I was standing on the side with a lever. We could stop it. We could stop that particular conveyor, see. And that wasn't my side, so I guess I was the main one on that yard, but a two-man yard. But anyway, I had at least one dozen or more against me in this, when I was standing on there, see. Because they quit, see. It was so sloppy, and you couldn't sit down, you couldn't do a doggone thing as long as that thing, you had to stay there. Period. And take care of the wood, see.
The whole shift?
Well, they... at noon. Or something could happen, you know.
Yeah.
There was, you know, pieces got in the machinery, or some machine broke down, or the belt was slipping or something, see, so we could probably stop for a minute or so. But they was going all the time, coming in the river. And they were about a meter long, I guess, and something like that. I don't know. Well, anyway, I stood on there, and I was getting pretty good at it, you know, and the boss knew he was watching nothing, what was going on. And right beside of me was a big, they call it the hog. You know what that is?
The hog?
The hog, that machine. They was as far as over to the corner there, was behind me there. Good big wheel with knives on it, see? And that cut the wood on the end. See? They had a 300 horsepower motor on it. And it was a big, there was two stories in there. Great big steel, cast iron and steel wheel, see? And there were the knives inserted into it, see? Just like a cutting, like a silage cutter. You know what that silage
is?
Something the same order, see? But the wood was coming in an angle, see? And those knives came across here, see? And cut that off in slices, like you slice meat, you know. That's the way it looks, see?
So So there was the hog.
There's the hog, see. That's what they call it, see.
It was a mean one.
Yeah, and there was a slope right down there, and that machine could take 24 inches piece. See. Well, anyway, there was an obedient standing on that job, and I watched him and got acquainted with him, and all he had was a pair of pants and a pair of shoes on, see. And he worked like nobody's business, see. And sweat, no fussing over this, and what's so damn important, you know? I didn't think Michael, the whole room couldn't work without him being there. Well, anyway, so here I stand on this job, sort of that wood, you know. Here comes the boss, he says, he's coming, he said, you want another job, he said. You like it here? Yeah, like I said, it's okay. I think we got either $9 or $12 a week, I don't remember which it was.
So there was good pay then?
A week.
Oh, there was a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at that time there was pretty good.
Well, if we can get along with it. Yeah.
But it was hard work.
We paid $1 a day for boarding a room. They was high those days.
$1?
Yeah, they soaked us, see. Took advantage of
it. You had no choice then, though.
No, well, not right there. Well, they weren't making it. You know. Yeah, they, the old, what do you call him? Old Norseman, he said, there was no Norwegian Norseman or something like that. He said, he's quitting. He said, you want his yab over there? Oh, I said, boss, I can't handle that yet. Hell, you can't. The way he was, he's a big guy like that. He wasn't letting an athlete. He twisting his ass and twisting, you know. And he, like he was, he used to want a guy, you know, these wild ones, you know. Yeah, he quit. Okay, I said, you try. He said, if you want it, you can have it. So, okay, I said, I'll take it. And boy, there was guys in there that been in that room for 10 years. And they were looking for that job because they were 10 cents more an hour, and I had a chance that we had to change the knives every night, see, as for the next shift, see, tomorrow, see. And the boss was always doing that, and so I worked with him, see, changing it. Him and I changed them, and he always gave me an hour, see, for going in working 15 minutes, and he comes up with the knives and had everything ready, you know. And When the whistle blew, you see, he was ready. He had it on the cart, a great big long knife. And took a man almost to lift one of them. Well, anyway, I got that thing, you see, and heck, I was making money. An extra hour and 10 cents more than I was, but heck, I was making more than my boarding room. You see, extras I had before. But those guys, you see, I had to take the wood from the barking machines there. There was a conveyor come in, and even there were 5 or 6 barking machines. One machine took the box, to bark off of the wood, you see, to hold them around, and there was a knife that took off it. See, and there was about 6 of them, I think, in there, see, and I got on, I wasn't used to it, because I had first judged that the piece was below 24 inches, see, before I put it down in this machine, because they was going down half the story, you see, and they come in to cast iron deal, and they got, especially the little end got in first, you see, they got stuck in there, see. And, you know, a meter long piece of wood, 24 inches, you know, there's a lot of weight in that, see. And the good Lord couldn't hardly get them back out again, see. I put a couple down in there, you see, and they stuck. And those guys, you know, also, even if that didn't happen, they were going to work me, see, so they all whistled, see. And all these 6 guys started feeding in their machines, see, as fast as they could, see.
And they were going to get you.
Used to get me, see, because I had to get used to it. We had a pickaxe, see, very sharp, the pickaxe that I had, see. And I had to kind of work it, so you know, for instance, if I had 3 7-inch pieces or something like that, I had to keep that hole full, see, to get the capacity of the machine, see. If I had 6 or 5 or 6 pounds inch pieces, one by one, you see, well, heck, there was no capacity at all in the days of old around there. I had to have 3 pieces in those 7 inches, you know, or 4. You know, it was hot, you know, in May, it would be June, July, you know, it was hotter than them. And I was sitting in there, and I was right in my face, and I was cussing in Swedish, and I was in bad trouble, see. I didn't know what to do, see.
Well, you were offered this job, though. You saw this guy
Yeah.
In shoes and sweaty all day.
That's right.
And were you not afraid to take it, though? I mean,
I was afraid. Well, I said,
you could.
I wanted the worst kind, but I didn't. At first, I didn't know you'd get more money, but I thought it was a little. You had to get used to
more
it.
Interesting.
Yeah,
than
more
what you had.
And he didn't have good study either. See, we had to fill up some big tanks. You see, they were creeping the wood. They came out of that machine differently.
I see. So the guy ahead of you, know, didn't he want the job, or did he was replaced by you? No. Where did he go?
I don't know where he's going. He left the country.
Well, he left.
Yeah, he said he's going to quit. He said he left town. I don't know where he was going.
So what happened now? Did you really keep up with the?
Yeah. Well, they like I'm telling you now. They were loading me up. I had wood. 6 feet high around there, see, in Sweden. And I went down to trying to straighten the thing up, you see, and the wood was coming, and I couldn't get it out of the way. So here comes the boss and pat me. Come, he said, had I working you? He said, he knew what they were doing. The other guy said, they should give me twice as much as I could. They knew I couldn't handle it.
Were they Swedes?
No, they were Finlanders.
Oh, and so they saw the chance, said, here we have one from Sweden.
Well, I said, this guy here, you know, we're going to have some fun with him, see. And the Finlanders and Polanders, that's most in that room, see? And when the shift I was done, see? Well, you see that button over there? He said, no, it was for. Go there, you stop the whole works. They'll fix them. I didn't know that button was there, but if something like this happened, say, just get over there. He said, but stop that. Stop the whole works. Stop the way down gun conveyor, the whole damn room. So, probably thought I didn't know about that. See, so they were going to have some fun with me. But I got straightened up. And so I thought, you son of a gun. So now I'm going to get even with you someday when I have a chance. So I got in 3-4 days, you know, and they settled down. And see, we couldn't talk to each other. So in that room was much noise. Those Finlanders, they've been there 10 years and they couldn't even hardly talk English. They couldn't hardly, so they talk Polish and English and 4 or 5 different languages in that room. They were using the different dumb languages.
There was a good thing it was noise there because you couldn't understand them anyhow.
That's right. In that machine, I was feeling it was a damn noisy, you see. So I cut them in the ears. Oh, that made a terrific noise, see. Imagine cutting that thing, you know, yeah. And slice it like on the end.
This sounds like dangerous, though, didn't this?
Yeah, well, they were down far, and there was kind of a shield. See, I was standing up high. There was they came down, and see, there was a shield over it, right where they were going in the machine, so they couldn't go up. See, I was a little higher, but I got hit sometimes with a little chip, these little ones. But, then I found out, see if I had a piece that I was doubting about, you see, whether it was 23 or 24 inches, see. I put the big end down first, see, so that it didn't get stuck, see, then I could pull it back up, see. Well, all that day I found that out, see, and, after I got stuck, see. And a piece like that, I had to take it up and throw it off on the side, see, and then pull it back out again. And I put it on the side, and I had some guys come and split it, see. So they go down there, see, it was too big. Well, anyway, I found out that if you fed that machine there, if you had, I'd say, about 4 or 5 pieces, there was about 22 inches or something like that, or 23, you said that it went in, so you can feed them in. There was a long belt, you see, that belt would slip, see. And that slightly slowed down the machine, you see, that was cutting it. Mm-hmm. And they was made that when they was cutting it that fast, you see, they came off the knives and then and flew back against the back of the machine, see, and by doing so, they split up by itself, see? You see what I mean? They busted up, you see, because they was cut. You know how the wood was cut this way, you see?
Uh-huh.
And you see, when they fell down, you see, they broke up by itself by hitting the back end so fast, see? But if the machine slowed down a little bit, you see, then the force wasn't so great, and it went out of the machine probably in big pieces like this, you see, instead of supposed to come out like broken matches or something, like wooden matches. That was the ultimate idea of cutting it up, see, before they went into the cooker, see, and they went through other machines, but they were cut down farther. So I was supposed to get back in pieces and wake up pretty good. But anyway, slowed down. That force was eliminated, see, and they went up to the next machine and it overloaded that, see. So they just choked it up, see. But that machine, old Mel, you see, was with two men on that. So when at night, especially after 10 o'clock, 11, no boss or anybody come on, see, they just went down and laid it aside and think about the machine, you see. And I didn't pay attention to it. She thought it'd be looking fine. It should become yellow, become bright, see. And they went to sleep, you know, about midnight, something like that, those guys, see. So I said, I'm gonna get you. See, so I just picked out four or five pieces, see. 23-inch pieces, he laid them aside.
Sidan 2 och kassett 2. Fortsättning med Conrad Reinell, Minneapolis, Iowa. Kassett 2, sida 2.
Jerk them off, see. And then when they got to sleeping good, one on each side of that machine, you see, I picked them up and fed them one after the other, see. And they slowed down the machine, see. And the pieces came up to the next machine where those guys were sleeping, see. And they wouldn't go through it, you see, because there were two bigger pieces that they couldn't. And the gun wood was coming over them. They couldn't see but the head of those guys before they slowed it, before they woke up.
So you got even?
Then I got even, see, and I had to stop that I cleaned out the machine. I had to stop my machine.
How long did you stay on this machine, Alan?
Huh?
How long did you stay at this machine?
Well, I went about a year and a half, I guess, altogether. See, I got disgusted. My buddy, he was going to go back home. He was just in there to save money. And he sent back money back. Well, I don't know what he sent so much back home, but anyway, he was saving his money.
So go back to Sweden?
Be Sweden. See, he had about 5 years. Said, I'm going to be the line. I'm going to back home. And he wanted to buy himself a truck. You know, they were high priced and they were very scarce those days. So he stayed, I guess, with the same place where we were boarding. But I was working a night shift, see, and I got the Sioux Line up there, there were two, three railroads going through that town, too, anyway. So I went over around Superior, you know, Wisconsin, and fooled around, and I wanted to get out of there, because I couldn't learn the English language, you see, because he could learn, because it was quiet, see, where the paper came out, you know, you could talk to each other, but we couldn't talk to each other, see.
You didn't get a chance to say anything?
No, I couldn't. And at home, they wanted to learn the kids and to talk Swedish. So the small kids, you see, that it was all Swedish, you know, and when it wasn't Swedish, but I guess it was noise.
So you stayed with the Swedish family then?
No. I broke away.
You broke away?
I quit. Like I said, I went on the railroad when I got off work about 6 o'clock in the morning, you know. The first train, you know, came through there, you see. I jumped on it, you know, stopped down the line trying to find a milk plant, see. That's what I had in my mind to do, see.
So you went to Wisconsin then, or?
Yeah, I went to Wisconsin, that's exactly what I did. And there was found a little place over there, see. And I wasn't gonna have them. Well, they didn't. Any of them talk Swedish in there, and they had changed hands. I don't know, there was five, six guys in there. They were selling milk, they were bottling milk there, and they were making churning butter. And I used to took a job, you know, as a flunky, they say, used to get used to it. Because, you see, I had two strikes against me, you see, because the machinery and things, you see, were different in Swedish, you see, than it is English. I had to get the learning, all these things, I wanted to get in the plant, see. And beside that, we have the metric system over there, see. And I had all these sizes, these degrees, you know, pasteurizing temperatures, you know, and dimensions, see. I had that in metric system in my head.
Yes.
I didn't know anything about English, about the inches and the feet and acres and something like that, see. So I wanted to get in there. So I told the boss that. They said, oh, I said, you'll be handy around here. And he was just a farmer, a manager, you know, three, four girls. In the office there, and a couple of butter makers there. So I was in there, and I didn't expect anything, and you know, but that looked kind of funny, you know. They come and ask, try to ask me questions, and I knew a few Swedish words, you know. And they wanted me to get, come over and taste the milk, see. And when they were pasteurizing and neutralizing and fixing up the butter, they come over and me, smoker, see. And wanted me to come over there, you know, and when they're making the butter, and you come over and smoke us. You know, that doggone funny, you know, they come and ask me these questions. So, and I couldn't explain it to them in English anyway, you see. I used to, that is, even at moment, I didn't pay any attention, but that thing was just about ready to fold up, that plant, and by God, it wouldn't be in there 2 weeks. And by God, no wonder they did. Because they were, I knew all these things in my head, what was supposed to be done, but by God, I couldn't tell them. See, and I could help them out.
So you could see then there was some problem there?
I could see there was a problem if they'd been there a week. See, and I was out washing cans, and they got the cream in, and the milk came in, you know. I'd done a little testing of the milk, you know, and cream and stuff like that. But so by God, I heard that. Come to work one Monday morning. I didn't know, nobody told me, by God, it was closed up, see. So there I was landing. You know what South Superior is?
Yes.
There was a streetcar coming from Superior out to South Superior. So I said, what the heck am I going to do now? And I was living with it. You know, I had a house rented. Well, in fact, me and a Finlander, Swedish Finlander, we rented a room together from an old Swedish lady there. And he worked night and I worked night. We used the same bed. So we really cut things in two, you know.
Still, yeah.
And, so I still stayed there for a few days though, and I went downtown, I went down to Luton, to the employment offices, and they just came down to Aida. I had to go out to milk cows on a farm, or go up to Minnesota and fire or run a donkey up in the woods. You know where the donkey is, they have them there. Those steam things that they go around.
Yeah.
They turn them, and then cranes, they load the cars. Mm-hmm. Have a crane, you know, that picks up the logs and load it, and they haul them down to the mills, you know. Oh. Well, anyway, there was between the two of them, and but I had to go out in the woods, you see, right up there, and I thought, damn it, there was almost twice as much money, you know, get up and get that. But see, I knew how to do that, you see. I was in and out, and when I was in the service, see, I was firing
in Karlskrona.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And we was in the three of us when we when we come out, you know, we were together most of the time. By God, he wrote those recommendations, the captain. By God, he said, boys, you deserve it. Mm-hmm. Because he was so doggone particular, and all the guys like that, you see. Now, we've been out to fire, we went so much with coal because we didn't have the coal. We were firing with wood and peat moss and stuff like that in our daily life. But we knew that if we had a clean smoke, we had a clean fire, and that was economical and it was like a lot of bees, see? Coal, wood, or whatever it was. And then he said, boys, look over there, see that ship coming over there. All right, we can see him already. See that black smoke? No, he said, that guy was 10 miles the other way. He said, you couldn't see him, could you? No. But you could see he's black smoke. Yeah, you probably could, see. That's what I want to get out of, he said. I don't want no black smokes out of these chimneys, he said. No matter where you are. Where you fire on land, and you fire, or you out in the, we were not on the big ships. We were on the smaller ships. And we do most of the, say, coast work, see.
Good morning.
So you went up to the woods then in, to run this donkey then?
Yeah, no, I didn't go to the woods.
Oh, you didn't go to the woods?
No, I said, Carl, you had to get in business up there because, well, I don't know, I had a reason. I want to learn the language and then I go back to the milk business. See. That's what I aimed my head.
So you never stepped into
the woods? I went out to milk cows. Oh. I went down to the farm up there and it was right close to town. They probably, probably half a mile from the main town of South Superior, see? And there was an old man and his wife, and they probably had a hired hand, probably before I got there. But anyway, and they had a son, and he was enlisted in the Navy in the, wherever he was, see. He was kind of a wild one. They were the only son, only child, I think, but they didn't get along. He didn't get along with his dad, so he enlisted. They had, it was a big farm, awful big farm, but it was not an acre except a potato patch, but I got a plowed up. Oh. There were a lot of level land, and they've probably been that for years, I don't know, but anyway, they had a big, they had these cows, about 60 cows, and the old man died, see. And they called a man, their son, back from the Navy and came home. And he'd been home a few days when I got there. So that's why they advertised for somebody to help milk me. So they didn't have a milk machine. So we 3 hours, we milked 20 cows morning and night, see. No farming to do, so we were just laying around there, you know, dabbled around. See, we cut up some hay. We put up hundreds of tons of hay. And, we had a lot of fun anyway. And my job was to take that, we had no blind mare, you know, take her to haul down the milk to town. We shipped to Minneapolis, I mean, a passenger train, you know, about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning with the train going through, and it was my job to have that milk down there, see, for that train, with the old Black Moya. And we milked 20 cows apiece, and you know, I've been on the farm and things milk, you know.
By hand?
Yeah, milk by hand. Well, I never told you, but my dad, you see, when the World War came on, he went out and bought the we were rationing, see. And I said, everybody, well, we didn't get enough bread, but we got a card, 6 hectares, I think it was a month for each person in the family, something like that. And by having a farm, called a farmer, or have any ground that you could work yourself, you were classified as a farmer, and you get twice as much on your card. So Dad went out and bought 14 acres, see, and we called a farmer, see, and we got twice as much of everything that was on the card, see, and we were, well, at that time, I think we were used to probably 6 or 7, see, because...
Why was it like that the farmers should have more than the city people?
Because they raised it, see. They were producers, see.
So they were penalized then, the people?
Yeah, see? People were, yeah, see. You worked on anything else you see in town. But if you were a farmer, you see, you get twice as much, see. And that's exactly what we needed. Period.
So you were used then to milk by hand?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we just had a couple of cows, you know, but then I think we had 4 cows, see. So I and my brother, well, my younger brother milked most of the time while I was home, see, even 5 years younger. But anyway, I knew how to milk cows. So, but then his dad was a horseman, see. He had 2 teams of Broncos, Western Broncos, see. I don't know whether they ever had broke or not. No, they went broke. But anyway, they probably had a saddle on them, but they... But anyway, we used milk morning and night and put up hay. He said, "Bang, I can't bang, those 2 broncos. Team Broncos." He said, "You know about the horses?" "Yeah, I know a little bit about them." "You want to wake him?" He said, "I don't know." He'd been gone for a long time. He didn't know. He probably never seen any broncos before I saw him, see. "All right, let's try." So we got the lead harness. The old man probably, well, he had plenty of harness. He was a horseman. He had several teams around there. By God, we fixed up a thing, you know, and we had a lumber wagon, big wheels on. We nailed down, you know, and the bolts that we nailed that down and chained that down so it wouldn't come out, and then we bolted down. By God, a wide board about that wide and clear. So it was like a spring, you know, along the board, you know, 1-inch board, I think it was, double. And we got him harnessed up. He got him hooked up. He was sitting on the back, you know, and I was driving. And boy, it was a pasture, about 60 acres, not a spare. And the boy let him go around, I tell you. We had more darn fun with these damn thing. And he was sitting in the back there, and he was laughing, you know.
So you broke
them? We broke those darn teams, you know, and he sold them. Yeah, because I don't know what he got for them, anything, but... But yeah, we sold them, see, because we didn't need them. We didn't need any farming. We had another couple of teams, see. We took 1 team in the morning, go out and cut the grass.
Yeah, but how about the hay harvest? Now, did you...
Hay, yeah, we hauled in the hay. Yeah, then we were betting, see, on that thing. We had slings. You know how they have the slings, you know, and load? You load up probably 2 feet of hay in on a wagon, see, then you put a sling on top of that, see, and they had a ring on both the end of it, you see.
Yes.
So you can take and lift up the hay, you see, and that sling.
Into the barn?
Yeah, into the barn. See, you hoist it up, see. Uh-huh. We had 3 or 4 of them, see, on each wagon. We got up high, you see. And it was loose hay these days, you see. So we better who could load the biggest load, the tallest load, and get it into the barn. Boy, I tell you, we had a big time, you see. And he was, took turns about, you see, to load. One was taking it, they were raked up, you know, laying in the winter hole, you know. Waked up, you see, and one was on the wagon, you know, and spreading it out. He said, there was a trick, you see, how to spread it out so you could go up high. And boy, if you went into disappear, you know, spent the winnings, you know.
So you only use hay then, no corn or silage or anything like that? For the
sides
day?
On the, no.
Silage?
No, they didn't have
no silos.
No silos, and I wasn't there with it. I don't know. Yeah, he probably had it, but we never put up any though while I was there. But
he only bought hay. He bought the hay then.
No, we cut the hay.
He cut the hay too,
and hauled it into the barn. See, and fed it to the cows in the winter. Oh, we filled up.
You had horses then,
are
you?
Oh yeah, we had horses. Yeah, then, like I said, we had one. Used one team in the morning, one in the afternoon, and we cut. I cut it most of the time. You know, in the lake with another team, so we had plenty of horsepower. We thought those two. To Bronco, you know.
And the dairy cows now, were they outside in the wintertime too, or?
No, I wasn't there in the wintertime, see. They all had pastures, see.
I see.
I was there summer. I was there about 6 months, you see, and I had to go on the horse, you know, go out and round up the cows. I had to be up 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, and the cows rounded up, you see, but the old lady had breakfast ready, and we milked the cows, and I took them up to town. And he had a few halts around there, and I had to stop at some restaurants, you know, butcher shops, you know, pick up bones, and waste, you know, things like that in the morning, you know. Uh-huh. There was a kind of a lot I remember. I took a different horse. I had an old blind horse most of the time. She was tame, you know, and see, she didn't move, you know, if you wouldn't hold him in the lines, you know. I stopped, it was a barber shop. There was right on the railroad track. The track was far from here to the wall. There was a 2-3 train. There was a kind of a joint over there, a junction or something, but a lot of trains coming. And anyway, I had a different horse one morning. On one another team, you know, and I used to put the, well, I'd probably tie them up. I don't know, but anyway, I didn't do that morning. It was her or something, you know. And I just had the lines laying on the wagon, and I went into a place for some reason about 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning. See, and here comes a doggone doublehead, an old train coming through. They see, doublehead of steam engines, and the horse, he wasn't used to it. See. I never thought of it, you know. I had that young, wild horse, you know. And I used to come through that, you know how them, they were long trains, you know, those hopper cars, you know, they had 150 cars, I think, because they were always going downhill, you know. They all had to need the brakes on them, you know, because they come from the mountains. And here that horse took off for home. and I wasn't out of sight. And he took off, I think, before the train got to him, because they were just crossing, and they were making an awful lot of noise. So I think,
with the horse running away, and you stayed there 6 months, you said?
Something like that. That was up in May. Well, when the first I quit, see, things went down. I could see that, you see, the cows dried up. And
it was hard to get a job too.
Huh?
Well, the cost dried up, but I mean, it was hard to get another job, you think?
What happened. We got a snowstorm. I don't know what time it was, but the first snowstorm that was up there that fall. That was probably early part of November, I think it was. And they're coming in there, you know, and it got cold, you know, and that next morning the cows, you know, let up in milk and everything, so I figured here. I was not hired for any length of time, but I saw the handwriting on the wall. They couldn't afford to have me, you know, over the window. So I just, well, a few days before that, I guess I had made my mind up. I had a paper, Horse Dairyman, you know, that made in Wisconsin. That's a dairy paper, an old dairy paper. Nothing but dairy business in it. on the producing end of it, see.
Uh-huh.
About cows, you know, and raising them. And they, I think there was a monthly, I don't remember. But I got far enough that I could read. By that time,
you know,
the paper, and I saw an ad in there, and I wrote down an answer that was down in Illinois. And close by Galesburg. Well, it's here, it's, you know, by Galesburg.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I got out there, and there was a seed company, and they wanted somebody, you know, they talked to, you know, like somebody that wanted to start a dairy business, see. There was guys that was social-minded, you know, big guy, he was in the seed company. So I used for that when I stayed with them. They was just more or less of a fake, you know. He wanted somebody to do it, and I could do that, but I didn't have any money, and they didn't have any money either, see. So there was not much to it. But anyway, he gave me a job that summer, that winter. And in a agronomy room, you see, we were testing all the corn. And boy, I learned more of that. I had never seen any of the corn by that time, see. And I came just for the harvest, see, down over there. And I worked in the agronomy room, and my wife's brother happened to be in that agronomy room, see. And he was the main one in there. And we raised the corn, you see, we tested it, see. The big table, something like this, but there it is, wide as this, and long table, see. And there was, you know how to do that?
Well, I never seen it.
Big corn, that was all, it was a bed, you know, fine limestone there, you know. And then we had a cloth, linen cloths, and they were had to be boiled for 1 hour. Boiled. We put that on top of the, boil every day, put that on top of the lime, and then we took, the corn came in. They'd already been sorted in a way, you know, right out in the field. Because when they pick seed corn, they used to take the big ears, see. Mm-hmm. And if they see any outward, there's a mark on it, there's the kernels have, is off colored or something like that, they don't take them, see. Or if there is if the ear is crooked, or if the ear is not filled out good, and or if the stalk is fell down, you don't pick anything off the ground. They had several things. Now, I didn't do much of that because I couldn't tell a good one for a bad one because I'd never seen any other corn before.
It was the first corn you ever seen?
First ear corn I ever seen, see? Because they didn't raise it. I mean, Minnesota, there wasn't any corn, they were on the farm. And then they didn't raise it in Sweden. So there you are. Well, anyway, I learned a heck of a lot, and I really enjoyed that. And it was warm, and we had to keep the rooms there, you know, 90 degrees in night and day, see? And I couldn't now determine what kind of disease an ear of corn had got, but they had some root rot, stalk rot, scutellum rot, diplodia was one of them, and well, they had 5-6 diseases, see. That is, when you read them. But what we did, how we told them, there were cases in here, there was half a bushel, I think, in a case, and they were certain lengths and certain widths, see. But they did put down its ears, see, somewhere I think we had 15 in the box layer, see, they were fixed out, see, so they were tight, laid down across it. And then we put another layer on top, see. And they went to the first layer, see, that was number one, ear right there, see. And there'd be 15 here, see, and that in for the first layer. The second layer in there, see, be 16, and there'd be 30 over here, see. We didn't mark it, see, but we knew that that's the way it came out, and there was, and I said the number, see. Mm-hmm. So then we took it. Ear in a hand, left hand, and we took out 15 kernels. We kept on turning the ear. We took out 15 kernels all over and all sides over that particular ear, see. And put that we put that right down on that cloth. that had been boiled, see, on top of that. See, but we put down in the order there, we think we put down. It was either, I think we put down all. That was 15, I don't remember now what we did. But anyway, we had 6 or 7, at least. And we put them in a place, you know, that, where that ear was, see. And then we took that ear and laid that down in another box, like we were taking out, see. So the first we put in the box was number 1, see. They were never marked, but this is the natural one. We put down the same way, see, from 1 to 15 and 16 to 30, see, and marked the box. So we laid that right down on that cloth. Oh, that was on top of the lime. And then we had another cloth when we got the whole table full, see, and put on top of that. Mm-hmm. On top of the cups. And of course, then we sprinkled with water, lukewarm water, see, about 80, 90 degrees, like rainwater, take the place of rainwater, see, sprinkled that on the top sheet, see, then in about 2 days, you know, they start sprouting, see. 90 degrees, see, ideal for corn, see. They start sprouting now, see. And then we watched them, but we didn't do anything before we had, they get up to a week old, see. They really, when we read them, and by that time, you see, the top sheet was up this high, see. Sprouts lifted it up, see. And they were ready to read, see. And then we went in and examined the roots. And that little plant out of each kernel, see? And that's what you determined whether that ear that we had at number 1 was good enough to go out for seed corn, see? Just, see? Anything that had disease or any trouble with it, you threw them away, those ears. And well, they fell, you know, but they didn't go out for seed corn.
So this was an interesting job you had.
Yeah. I learned something there too.
You liked that too, then? How long did you stay?
Well, it was just one winter.
One winter.
Well,
and that was down around the guest where you said?
Yeah, well, that's...
Knoxville?
No, there was...
Woodhull?
No, they were far away. Well, I'm not going to give you that.
But it's around there...
They was back in that neighborhood, but yeah. Anyway, that's where I met my wife, see.
Down there?
Her brother was this agronomist, see.
Is she of Swedish background?
Oh, yes, yeah. Here, you see her. She was on the farm.
And she's born in...
Born in Henderson County.
Oh, in the Oyster County?
Henderson.
Oh, Henderson?
Illinois,
oh, yeah. Sure, that's not the Gettysburg.
Yeah, so...
I see that.
So I didn't stay there. I went got a job at the Pioneer Equipment Company in Galesburg. It was a big company at that time.
Yes.
And they sent me out, the first thing I was out in the truck. So I'm picking up cream. Because I went back in that business. That's why I got down there, see, from Wisconsin. So I got in there and I had a route every week, so a different day in the week. I think Saturday probably I didn't go in, but I went to a place, my wife's home, you see, so I got that cream, you see. And well, anyway, I was in there not very long, and I got in working in the plant. That's where I wanted to see. So the superintendent, they had 8 big chums in there. It was a pretty big place at that time. They were at, have you acquainted in Galesburg?
Oh, yes. Sure.
Well, you know, they were down by the railroad tracks and they were back, I forget the
Seminary Avenue?
Yeah, I forgot. Well, anyway, I got in there, you know, and Carl Lawson, he was superintendent there. And I was getting along pretty good within the language by that time. You see, I've been out with people, you know, and I could get along. And I was reading a lot, and I was writing to my wife, see. She was writing in English. I was writing in English, and she corrected.
So your wife is born here?
Yeah, she's born or whatever.
But she also speaks Swedish?
Yeah, she was raised from Swedish people, so she knows Swedish, yeah. Mm-hmm. Her whole family can talk Swedish, at the time. Most of them are gone. But they, so I got that job in there, you know, I had a talk with the superintendent there, you know. I was on the intake the first day. And tasting the queen. He didn't check me out, you see, because I was really going on my back. I mean, I had, you see, I had some 4 or 5 plants in, you know, old country, you know, where they learned over there. I wasn't going to let that go out the wind, see.
So you were determined to learn Fahrenheit and degrees?
Sure, yeah, that's right, see. And a starter, they were making a starter too. They were doing that over there, see, and you never find that very many places. It gives, but because they were all Danes and Swedes over there, see, they're running that plant. They were owned by a bunch of Swedes to begin with, you see. And they were all starter makers, and that, in those days, that was the trick, because you'd get them cream, you know, from the farmers, and some of them have certain weed, you know, and they have certain flavor, and taste. You mix that all together, see. Well, you get a heck of a tasting butter, see. So, you know, you have to...
How could you avoid this taste, though? You used to take it out of... you couldn't taste all the cream from any farm.
You could taste what it was. You could grade it, see, put it in different bunches, see.
I know, but I mean, when you picked up cream now from every farm, did you taste it?
No. Yeah, I did, but mm-hmm. I didn't grade it. It had to be decent. If it had a little off flavor, you could doctor that up, see.
I see.
But if it had onion or something like that, I just didn't pick it up if I caught it, see, because that's a hard thing. But I didn't do that. That was my job, see. My job would haul it in, but when in your plant, see. When it came in on the railroads, so what I mean, and when you come in with a load, you see, they put it on the conveyor, see, and put it in, you know, with the numbers on the cans and things, you see, they guys in the plant,
yeah,
then the tasting, and they sorted that out which way it was going to go, see, with first or second or third grade butter.